What is going on, everyone? Jim here with the Flying Midwest Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us for this very special bonus episode. Each episode, there's a little bit of content that doesn't make it into the episode and ends up on the cutting room floor. We'll bring you some of that this week. From episode 2, talking about training, we'll discuss a little bit more about our thoughts on flight simulators during your flight training experience. From episode 5, learning through experience with Lion Templin, we'll share another one of his in-flight stories as a lesson for all of us. And from episode 6, we'll hear more from Piper brand ambassador Elle Taylor on her experiences at Minnesota State University in Mankato, and who was her biggest influence as she pursued a career in aviation. We won't have a full crew this time around, but rest assured that Maddie, Trevor, and I will all be back next week for a full episode featuring a special guest that we've been dropping clues on for the last 2 weeks. The bonus episode of the podcast starts right now.
Crystal Tower Formation Whiskey, 21530 Zulu, wind 0605.
076 Mike Juliet, Zulu departure radar contact.
SOS weather information from Minnesota available on flight service frequency.
You've dialed in the Flying Midwest Podcast, connecting aviators from across America's heartland. Sharing news, information, and events from around the region.
Calling Nancy 53 on Nova Tower, Roger, turn left heading 070, runway 9er, clear for takeoff.
Sit back, relax, and join our crew for some hangar talk as we discuss a wide variety of regional aviation topics.
Archer 71143, front flag, tower runway 280 left, push takeoff, push control center.
And now, from our home at the Anoka County Blaine Airport, our checklist is complete and we're ready for departure for another episode of the Flying Midwest Podcast.
Contact Archer, every flight.
Welcome to the Flying Midwest Podcast, everyone. My name is Jim Schilling. I am one of your hosts. My two co-hosts, Trevor Norman and Maddie Johnson, won't be joining me this time around as we decided to do this special bonus episode of the podcast. So what happened was, due to some scheduling constraints and some other issues, our schedule for typical release of every 2 weeks got pushed off by a week. So rather than wait, 3 weeks before our episodes, we decided that on our regularly scheduled release date, we would put out this bonus episode. As I mentioned in the intro, each episode does have a little bit of content that we do unfortunately have to cut due to time constraints. Otherwise, we'd have a podcast that goes an hour and a half to 2 hours. And I'm sure you get tired of hearing our voices after about 10 minutes. Just as a general formatting rule, we try to keep it around an hour or so to be respectful of the time of our audience. So, as we get started here, I don't think that Maddie and Trevor understand fully the power that they gave me by allowing me to fly solo, but I essentially get to talk about whatever I want before we start the bonus content itself. As much fun as I thought it would be to post just a bunch of blooper reel content of the three of us, I figured I'll just take the high road and I wanted to share a story from one of my recent flights a week or so ago. So, I think it was this last fall that my sister and her family bought a house adjacent to a local airport in the Twin Cities metro area. That's maybe a 15-20 minute flight from my home airport. Their house has a great view from their back picture window of the approach end of one of the runways at this uncontrolled airport. So my sister has two young kids, and obviously I am the cool uncle because I'm a pilot. That should just go without saying. We had to burn about 2 hours off of our aircraft before our next oil change, so I decided I would just go and do some pattern work over at this airport. So my sister was at home for the day. She's there with her daughter, and I sent her a message, said I'd be going over to that airport doing some pattern work, and if her and my niece wanted to watch, they could, peek out the window. The wind wasn't favoring that runway specifically, but they'd be able to look out their window. They got this nice open field area to still watch the aircraft in the pattern. My plan was to get away from the larger controlled airport that I fly out of and maybe do some power off 180s. I'm working on my commercial rating, so I thought that going to that smaller uncontrolled airport, I might have a chance to get some of those maneuvers in. I was mistaken. It was an absolutely beautiful day. First real nice day of spring for us to get up and do some flying. And obviously a lot of other people had the same idea I did to knock some of that rust off and get some flight time in. So just the volume that we had in the traffic pattern over there, I wasn't able to do my power off 180s right away. I just worked the pattern with everybody else that was over there and just kind of knocked off some of that rust. Once the pattern slowed down a little bit, I was the only one left over there. I did get the opportunity to work on those power off 180s. One of the fun and challenging parts about those maneuvers for me, especially at an uncontrolled airport, is the traffic calls just come so quick as you're doing that maneuver. So it kind of tested my skills in that regard, and in an area that admittedly is not one of my stronger suits of doing those uncontrolled airport traffic calls. So as I got ready to head back to my home airport, my final landing at that airport, I went to the run-up area and I just checked my phone real quick, and I got the coolest picture from my sister. My niece was sitting on the back of the couch. She had a pair of little binoculars out, and she had been watching me working the pattern at the airport. My sister grabbed some pictures of me and the pattern and a picture of her daughter, and it was just a really cool experience. I'm kind of personally hoping that their proximity to that airport will help them catch the aviation bug, so to speak, as well. Maybe take them up in the plane one day. But at the very least, I've got that picture to hang on to, and I feel like I've further solidified my place as the cool uncle. So thanks for playing along and humoring me as I told my little story from a cool experience for me last week. But now I get to share something that I've been excited to kind of spill the beans on for the last 2 weeks. So several weeks ago, Maddie had reached out to this YouTuber that we have all come to really, really enjoy. He does do a lot of satire work on his YouTube channel, and the guy is just hilarious. We had the opportunity to sit down with him earlier this week to just do some prep work before the episode, and we just had such a blast. So we're going to be really excited to bring that episode to you in about a week. What we did do, though, is decided we would take some little clues from his content and share that through different posts on our Facebook page to see if we can get anyone to guess who this mystery guest could be. So what I want to do right now is recap what some of those clues were and see if, as you're listening, if you hadn't picked it up before, maybe you can pick it up now. So this one was kind of subtle. We, on March 14th, put out a thank you for our 500 followers. The background picture I picked was pretty deliberate, as there's kind of a little paper airplane that someone throws across this kind of cotton candy colored sky, right? So the clue there was actually the little paper airplane. This YouTuber uses kind of circling paper airplanes around a separate graphic on the intro portion of their videos. So the next one was an article that we actually posted on March 17th for the Hulu live stream of the Red Bull plane swap ridiculous skydiving stunt. The comment that we posted there was it's either an incredibly stupid stunt or life-saving research for the phenomenon of being sucked out of your airplane like Trevor Jacob. So this YouTuber actually did a video about the Trevor Jacob incident and had said that essentially Trevor was just sucked out of his airplane. He's just a poor victim in all of this. So that was the clue in that post. The next one was actually a picture that day of flying that I had just talked about over by my sister's place. And that's on March 19th. And the caption of that photo was sipping on some 100 Lolud yesterday. That was the clue within that post. This YouTuber has a video of doing some pre-flight stuff, as well as some of his social media content. Images are him drinking 100 Lolud, it appears, out of one of those GATS containers. Now, obviously, he is not drinking 100 Lolud out of those containers. So if you think that's what he's doing, he's not. It's a satire. And I'm sure if you look close enough, it probably says that right on his t-shirt. The next clue is from the 21st, and that is that picture of the red carpet. We use that because he does a great video of pre-flighting a Cirrus. And in that pre-flight a Cirrus video, he's got the red carpet lined up to the left door. And he makes a comment about, make sure you put both bottles of water up on the top right-hand corner. That's how you know you're good to go flying. He actually zooms in on another Cirrus on the field, and it also has that same configuration. So by around the 24th, I was starting to think that maybe no one's going to get it. I'm going to start making these a little bit more obvious, at least I thought. So the post that I did first on the 24th was Major Kong from Dr. Strangelove, where he's riding the nuke out of the belly of a B-52 down to its target. And he's got his cowboy hat, and he's waving that thing around in the air. So within the picture, that is the other graphic from this YouTuber's intro. Not exactly, but it is similar. In his videos, he's got a Cirrus with the parachute deployed and a pilot waving his hat around as he rides the Cirrus down after pulling the parachute. There's also a comment in there on that post that just said, you know, Major Kong isn't our next guest. That would be just silly. I stopped just short of writing just plain silly because that's the name of the channel itself. I did say that, you know, we're ready to drop the bomb on Saturday. Bomb was spelled B-O-M. And that was spelled that way because the most recent video dropped by this YouTuber was some clips of videos that he hadn't completed making. One of those was about the bomb device that you can connect on your aircraft for collecting and showing you flight data on, like, a tablet in the aircraft with you. The second clues that I posted on the 24th actually went back to a conversation that we had with this YouTuber on Tuesday of this week, where we discussed the clues that we were putting out there. And a specific comment I made to him, either we're not very popular or he's not very popular because no one's guessing. So I put that in there just as that's kind of a joke for us based on our conversation. But the clue in there was directly related to a video that he did where he was not listed in an AOPA article that listed out a bunch of their favorite YouTubers. So he did that video, pretty funny if you haven't seen that one. And then from there, AOPA actually did a video response where he said he made a list, but they apologized for not putting him on that list and kind of mocked him a little bit for his response to it, all in good fun. Finally, there's two sets of clues on the 25th. The first of which is a reference to the yellow X on closed runways. This YouTuber does a video specifically on that, talks about special FAA-approved lumber and paint and all of that. The final clue is an ode to the number of times he has been reported to the FISDO and FAA for various things by people who take him way too seriously. There are some people that don't have the same sense of humor or kind of miss the mark when he specifically mentions that his videos are satirical in nature, and he has had a few occasions of being reported to the FAA for various things. The clue itself, though, talks about reference to a student asking him something. Now, he's not a CFI. He doesn't claim to be a CFI, but then he specifically says in some of his videos, and by students I mean, and then says something ridiculous. So our quote there is one of those things and where he had said in a video, by students I mean I teach mechanical bull riding to people with vertigo at a local pub. Again, all that just in good fun, and as his channel is called, it's just plain silly. So, have you figured it out? If not, our next guest is Brian Turner. He has a YouTube channel called Just Plain Silly, spelled just like it should be, P-L-A-N-E. Some of my favorite videos on there are the Cirrus pre-flights, his hilarious take on the Trevor Jacob crash of him being sucked out of the airplane, and essentially poor Trevor's just a poor victim here. It's really funny. If you haven't seen it, I suggest you check that one out. And one of my other favorites is where he says he can teach someone how to fly in probably like 5 minutes or so. If you're not familiar with him, have not checked him out, by all means, go check out his YouTube channel. We will have him on next week for our episode. It's going to be a really good time. We had a good time just in prep. I can't imagine how much more fun we're going to have actually recording the episode. So really excited to bring that to you. And just an extra little bonus for all of you, just based on the way that we're doing these next few episodes, we will be publishing something the next 3 weeks in a row. So you'll get the bonus episode today. You'll get the Brian Turner episode next week. And the week after that, we get back to our normal rotation of episodes where we'll have Nicole Mitchell, former KSTP meteorologist. She flew with the Hurricane Hunters in the back of C-130s flying into hurricanes as a weather officer with the Air Force and continues to serve with a weather squadron as a lieutenant colonel in the Air National Guard in Wisconsin. And that is but a short list of her resume. So we'll look forward to having Nicole on the podcast that we'll release on April 9th. All right, so let's jump into the bonus content. Our first clip comes to you from episode 2, where we talked about flight training, the different approaches that we use, as well as is there benefits to using flight simulators in your training? So this is a little bit more of that conversation between Maddie, Trevor, and I.
Now, one thing I will say, I did use flight simulator in one very key aspect, and I actually do encourage a lot of student pilots that I talk to getting in there is, you know what, I had an A2A Piper Cherokee 180, my personal airplane. You know, I basically mimicked it as best as I possibly could. The only difference is the software actually had an autopilot on there. It was like an auto control 3, or maybe I can't remember what autopilot was. But basically, I started looking at, you know, flight planning, working your E6B, your manual E6B, because Flight Simulator, you can actually, okay, there's a road. I'm going to hack the clock. Okay, I cross that. I'm going to beam that point. What's my ground speed? What's my fuel burn? What's my all that other ancillary stuff that really takes away your time inside the airplane trying to fiddle around with that? That is one huge advantage to doing it in your primary. As long as you're not learning your actual feel of the airplane, because as we all know, private pilot, you're learning how to fly an airplane in a private pilot level, not a mastery level where you're trying to get to the airlines, you're trying to be the Thunderbirds, trying to fly this precision stuff. You're trying to learn how to fly an airplane, and you have that learning skill set. As long as you're not applying it to that, but you have some procedures, some techniques, some ancillary things like working your E6B, your ground school, or your ground speed, your fuel consumption, your windage, all that sort of stuff, that I would say that would be a good use of time, because you're not burning up actual avgas if you're fiddling around. Oh crap, I just missed that waypoint. Now all of a sudden I have to go back to the square one.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really think about that aspect of it, but that's a good point as far as just there's a lot to be said about chair flying too. Mm-hmm. You know, and just that's more of a procedural thing as opposed to where I had looked at it with the seat of the pants feel and practicing maneuvers. But yeah, I mean, we talked about a couple episodes with our opinion about, you know, the iPads, those other skills are important too, to know how to utilize your pilotage and your dead reckoning and things like that to get where you need to go.
It worked very well for me when I was trying to figure out the triangulation aspect, you know, tuning this VOR and tuning in this VOR. I got so good at it that I started actually going onto a student pilot Facebook web page and started doing where am I, you know, and put up a sectional and have student pilots start looking at that too, because it's like, hey, I can actually use this and you can use it as a teaching tool as well. So, you know, basic instruments, you can do that for triangulation, you know, trying to figure out where you are, what are some options that you have as a private pilot, because let's face it. My very first instructor, they only had one sectional and they ventured a little bit off that sectional and they had to go down to, what was it, five or 700 feet to read a water tower name.
Yep. Yep.
Find out where exactly they were. You know, and that was his, he just became a private pilot. He was flying along and he got lost. Well, he didn't want to admit that he was lost, which is, you know, that is a mistake. You don't want to not admit your loss, because then that starts getting the ball rolling in a few different avenues. But going back to simulators, it gives you an opportunity to really hone your skills procedurally without spending all that extra money in the airplane. And I credit that to me getting my private pilot in 37 hours. That saves a lot of money.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I haven't personally experienced this very much, but I know I have a few friends who use Pilot Edge or VATSIM, and both of these programs simulate real ATC. And actually, there are a lot of real ATC people on there doing real ATC things, you know, in a simulated environment. So you can call up, you know, you take off in your fake aircraft, whatever you choose, and you can call up whomever, your nearest center, nearest tower or whatever, you can talk to them and they will give you real instructions. And I think I know a few of my friends have actually really benefited from that, and they actually went into their training very confident on the radios and actually doing quite well, you know, for a beginner, and were able to have a head start on those skills. Especially radios seem to be one of the biggest strongholds, I guess. People really have trouble all over the board with radios. I personally did. I was good at them at the end of my primary training, but definitely getting started, clam up. And I know I'm not the only one. I think everybody kind of has that, unless you have experience with radios, like your ham radio operator or what have you. But as long as you don't get into weird pitfalls, definitely can help confidence.
And that's a good point too, is getting into those pitfalls and avoiding them. Most of my simulator time was with my instructor in an approved flight simulator environment. Granted, I had my own flight simulator FSX program at home, but there could be a tendency to develop bad habits and not realize you're doing it without mm-hmm. the watchful eye of an instructor in that phase of instruction. But again, I don't see a necessarily a disadvantage to what Trevor brought up earlier about chair flying your cross countries. That's some good practice just before that. But as far as like you're talking about with, you know, the mic fright, trying to break that before you get in there and being procedurally sound with how you talk, that's important to just watch out for those kind of catches of developing potential bad habits if you're doing it on your own. So we're not your flight instructor. So obviously consult your own on how you want to go about the use of those kinds of tools.
I definitely think the one big thing to keep in mind, just all over the board, when you're using a flight simulator on your own, you're not an approved flight simulator with your instructor. It is for informational use only, if you will. It's not something that you're going to maybe apply directly. Even stuff with instruments, it probably won't react exactly the same. You clicking on your computer mouse is not going to be the same thing as actually touching those buttons. It will not be the same. It won't feel the same. It'll be different. So just keeping that in mind while you're doing those flight sims, whether you're not even a pilot yet, you haven't touched a real plane yet, or you're, you know, just doing it for fun. You've already completed your commercial multi and all that kind of stuff. Just remembering to keep in mind that bad habits can be formed, and that knowing when you transition to an aircraft, it's going to be different, and that you need to just keep that in mind so you don't get yourself into trouble.
And one thing I'll add on to that is, back in the day, yeah, I was a big flight sim guy. I mean, I probably logged several thousand hours of flight sim when I was younger. I mean, it was a big hobby. But one thing that always got to me, even to today, and I don't know, maybe this is an unpopular opinion, but if we have somebody who's trying to become a private pilot, you know, they're starting out at square one, don't go and try to fly the 747
right
as a Cessna driver. You know, there is specific training that you need to go through. And quite honestly, if you're looking to go airlines, you will be in a simulator. You will be flying advanced training devices, flight training devices that are procedure trainers. They're not the full motion, but you have the buttonology, you can do the clicks and all that sort of stuff. You have that available to you once you get to that level. But one thing that I've noticed when I went to start working for the airlines is teaching classes, especially systems. You have people that are learning a lot of these bad habits, procedures, and things of that nature that really don't apply. Sometimes they're even backwards. So if you're going to use the flight simulator effectively, not for entertainment use, for actual learning objectives, use your proper type of airplane. Now, I'm not saying go out there and spend $50 on an add-on. The flight simulator has a stock airplane that you can use for your instrument proficiency and things like that. But don't try to fly a 747 trying to learn the procedures in that. It will be a detriment to learning.
I didn't even think about that. I passed like single engine pistons or even multi pistons. I'm like, oh yeah, I know you can fly a 747, which would be super cool on a sim, but I didn't even think about it translating badly to more ATP plus mm-hmm. level.
So share some thoughts and opinions on the use of different flight simulators within your training environment. The biggest thing to keep in mind is to consult with your own flight instructor to figure out what is the right plan for you. Our next clip is going to come from episode 5, where we spoke to Lion Templin. He shared a number of stories about his aviation journey, as well as things that he learned along the way that he hoped to pass along to others, so we might learn from each other. So in this clip, Lion's going to tell us yet another story about his flights, this one being one where he inadvertently went VFR into IMC conditions. He'll talk about how he got into that situation and how he dealt with it.
I, once again, go for dinner down in Des Moines, which is a couple hour flight, right? Mm-hmm. And so I and my wife, we go down there to have dinner with some old friends of mine. And it's a great time. The flight down there, easy peasy, no problem. VFR all the way. But while we're there, you know, the weather shifts on you. And we take off and it's no big deal. But as we're kind of heading north, the ceilings are getting lower and lower and lower. I mean, that's a classic tale, right? Like clouds are coming down. But I got plenty of room. I'm on flight following, so no big deal. And as we're kind of progressing into it, you know, it's dark, clouds overhead. So, you know, there's no moon, there's no stars or anything like that. Hey, it's an easy flight, not a big deal. And then all of a sudden the world disappears on me, flight into clouds. Oh, okay. Well, this is kind of a problem, right? So I recall that just about my 2 o'clock is, Fairball. And I remember seeing the airport. I know that it's there. So I just gently turn the aircraft to there and begin a descent. And sure enough, a few moments later, I come out of the clouds and I can see Fairball. Okay, well, that's interesting. All right, well, I bet I can fly this. So I head back on course and I keep going. And I've got the time to think through the problem. And the problem in my mind is that there's a number of layers of clouds. And, you know, that's kind of being reported as well, that there's kind of stacked layers of clouds with some openings here and there and that kind of thing. And I'm not going to be able to tell that they're there until it's kind of too late. Okay, fine. What I'll do, and I set this very specifically, I kind of decided on how I'd approach the problem as I'm kind of cruising along, that I would watch the horizon for the lights on the ground. And as I'm watching the horizon, if I saw the lights starting to go away, I knew that I would be heading into clouds. And it was only moments, but I then could prepare myself just to begin a descent, just, you know, right on course, and just a very gentle descent. And sure enough, clouds, you know, came in, the lights started to disappear, and sure enough, they overtook me. But just keeping my head together, descended the aircraft. And sure enough, he come out of the clouds. Well, now I have a different problem. This has happened a couple times. And now I'm concerned that if I keep descending, I'm going to run out of headroom. Because if the clouds keep coming down, they'll eventually push me down into the ground. So I need to actually regain that altitude. Well, how are you going to regain that altitude? Okay, well, I'll climb until the lights on the horizon start disappearing and then push it back down to level. So I'm cruising along for quite some time playing this game of, you know, okay, the lights are disappearing. Okay, descend. Okay, I can see the lights now, cruise for a minute or two, and then climb back up a little bit until I can see them disappear. And that's kind of the routine I got into. But it's a pretty intense moment. Like, I've got to really pay attention. And in my mind, it's one of these moments where you kind of become the aircraft. And these are kind of incredible times, to the point where my wife, she can see that something's going on here. You know, she's not dumb to this whole thing. And she recognizes that we're flying in the clouds. So she puts her hand over on me, you know, kind of like, hey, I'm here, that kind of thing. I'm like, take your hand away. Like, I'm the aircraft now. You can't take me out of the aircraft. And then I shut up after that. So I continue along the way doing this. And it's kind of funny because I think Minneapolis was getting a little concerned because every once in a while they come back with, you know, you're approved for a flight into Bravo. Okay, thanks. Oh, by the way, hey, you're approved for flight into Bravo. Okay. And I didn't really understand why, you know, I'm, you know, 45 miles out or more kind of thing. And they're giving me all this, but I'm pretty certain the controller was just like, we should check into this VFR guy that's clearly like changing altitude all the time and make sure he's okay. And sure enough, after an hour or more of all of that, the sky cleared up over Minneapolis. I could see all the way across Minneapolis itself and see Anoka on the north side, and fantastic, straight in landing, easy peasy. But it's one of these times where I had to kind of come up with something on the fly to figure out how do I deal with the problem and think through the problem in the aircraft. And that's kind of what I talk about a little bit about, you know, you've got time to figure it out if you take the time to think it through. And that turned into, in my mind, a really cool flight and something I will never forget. But it was really intense too. So there you go. More nighttime flying.
And I think I don't know how many of you have read the book by Paul Craig, The Killing Zone. It kind of discusses that whole time range of between 50 and 350 hours where you're kind of out of the nest of the student environment and you're you're in this zone where you're starting to feel comfortable enough, but you're still, you know, probably just about enough to be dangerous. And I believe that there's a section in there that actually talks about, you know, the scud running and things like that. And just the, you start that descent and you're trying to get away from the clouds, but then you recognize that, yeah, that headroom is going away and you need to be, have your wits about you to know what your options are.
Yeah. I knew that I was going to get in trouble if I kept descending. Like I just saw that wasn't going to have a good end. So I had to figure out a way to safely regain altitude. And it was just kind of the same program, as finding the clouds to begin with. But I managed it myself at that point. You know, that was intentional. And I never intended to like go out and scud run. It's just the situation changed on me.
Oh, right, right. Flight. Yeah, and I don't think that you intentionally were like, hey, let's go scud running. But I mean, how many stories do you hear about where someone has found themselves inadvertently in that IMC environment, and with the majority of flying during those night hours, it's, you could be a little bit more susceptible to it because you may not know where they're coming from.
Well, I think the big thing that helped me in that one is just that kind of initial, and I remember it really clearly, like I remember Fairball is right over there and making that kind of decision that I will approach Fairball. And then as I'm flying towards Fairball, realize, wait a minute, I can think through this problem. I don't have to terminate the flight at this point. Like we can figure this one out. And it made for a fantastic flight.
So that story does talk a little bit about some of the dangers that you can face, especially in night flight with those cloud conditions that he experienced. For our final clip, we'll go back to L. Taylor from episode 6. L talked to us about being a brand ambassador for Piper Aircraft, as well as beginning her journey into aviation at Minnesota State University in Mankato. So in this clip, she talks about being a female within that program and how it really isn't as big of a deal within the aviation community as there may be perceptions outside of aviation. Also, we talked to her about who was her greatest influence in joining the aviation community. We've talked a little bit about, you know, females in aviation and kind of starting the turning of the tide of that, as well as some of the perceptions that are still there. Have you had any challenges or adversity on your end going into aviation, be it, you know, just any pilot could have faced that adversity or because of being a female going into aviation?
I haven't, that has been like super astronomical, but it was more like the mentality coming into it. Before I came to Mankato, I was, you know, honestly, I was kind of like, you know, am I capable of like actually doing this? Like, you know, am I qualified? Am I smart enough to be able to do this? You know, you're going to be having all these guys here, you know, I don't know what they're going to think. I kind of just thought that maybe they'd think I wasn't smart enough or, you know, just because I was a female, I was weaker than they were. And coming here, it's actually been the complete opposite. They've been just very like helpful and supportive. And I've even had like some of my guy friends come to me for help with, you know, oh, I have my stage check coming up. Like, do you have any tips? And I would help study with them. And, you know, it's really cool because I feel like society would see it more of the opposite. Like, oh, the female needs help. Like, oh, of course you don't know this. Or, you know, it's okay that you don't know that. You know, you messed up. It happens. You're a girl. But it hasn't really been like that. And I'm really glad because then hopefully that stereotype can go away.
And I think the conversations that we've had too, that's a trend that we've noticed, like amongst pilots, like we don't necessarily see a difference. It's you're a good pilot, you're a capable pilot, you know, you're part of the club, you know, it doesn't matter if you're male, female, or whatever, we kind of are accepting of all in that regard. But there's still those perceptions within other arenas of society that, you know, kind of like you had talked about that
puts the general public.
Yeah. Puts that unnecessary pressure, I think. When you go into it and I obviously am speaking from a different gender, obviously, but it's from some of the conversations I've had with others, that's kind of what they experience as well.
I think it's also very motivating to me. You know, I want to be able to show that I am capable of doing it. And so, you know, along with it being my passion, something that I love, another thing too, that, you know, reminds me when I'm staying up late studying those GLIME questions, you know, you got to show everybody that you know what you're doing and, you know, you can do this. You are capable of doing it.
What makes aviation, I think,
one of the best careers, I guess, to show that women really can do it is because aviation is such a meritocracy. Not like in form, but it's just how it is. Like, the plane doesn't care what you are. It doesn't care at all. It cares, can you tell me the right things to do? That's it. If you can do that and you can do that really well, automatically, like, you're in a good standing. And I mean, as far as like, you know, in a school setting or just like a learning setting, having the people who really know what they're doing or have the aptitude for teaching or are just really good with like the book questions or a really good stick or whatever. Again, it doesn't matter the gender, but like, can you do those things? And I found that I'm the same. I've had very similar experiences, I think, to you, Al. Yeah, guys coming like, oh no, my check rate's coming up. What do I do? What do I say? Like, could you quiz me or whatever? And I'm always happy to help. You know, I love that. But yeah, now that I think about it, it's like, oh, they didn't take in, at least that I'm aware of, they didn't take into consideration. It's like, ooh, she's a girl. Like, I hope she really knows what she's talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that comes with the confidence and the fact that we pass all the same tests that they do. Every single one. Like, the ACS is the ACS. There's no ACS for girls, you know?
No.
ACS for dummies. Like, there's none of that. It's all the same and we all have to pass it. So it's kind of like, oh, okay, of course we're held all to the same standard, which means like, if you know what you're talking about, you know what you're talking about. So I think that's, in a sense, very helpful, I guess, for that perception for pilots, especially because I think there people in general understand that you have to kind of have a good head on your shoulders in order to control a machine that weighs at the minimum, like 2,000 pounds up to like tons and tons.
Or costs $500,000.
Yeah. Like, people complain about car prices. Like, have you seen plane prices?
or gas prices. Yep. I have so many friends that are like, you take it up, and I'm like, you want to see the gas prices? Because then you might change your mind.
Yeah, people are like, oh, will you take me up? I'm like, are you willing to pay a half? They're like, how much is half? I'm like, how long do you want to go for? An hour? $100. No, thanks. It's like, all right. I'm just saying. Yeah,
that's awesome.
One more thing I want to ask. That might help your cause for this RV, because I think I know what your answer is going to be. Who is your greatest influence in aviation?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Would be Kevin.
You hear that, Kevin?
We're raising
the skids for you, Al, so that you can have a chance when he finally kicks it. Like, you know what? Yeah, she's a good kid.
This is a point I was going to make earlier too. Back to the, you know, I graduated in, you know, 2 years and 4 months, or finished his schooling in that time. Not only that, but he was like ridiculously smart and still is. So it's, no, Dad, I got a 98 on my first instrument ground test. Well, why don't you get a 100?
Why'd you miss those questions?
Like, why'd you miss the one question? Like, come on. And I'm like, and then my mom is like, stop. Like, she worked hard at it. Like, it's okay. And I don't take it personally. It's more just funny because, you know, he was all, I got all A's and I graduated with this and that. But, you know, it could be another thing, I guess you could say, would motivate me to one-up my dad, which I don't even know if that's possible.
It's worth a shot, right?
It's possible. It's definitely possible.
I don't know if I'll be able to build an airplane, maybe, but I guess we'll see.
Buying one's okay, too.
Yeah.
It sounds like my primary instructor, though. I got an 85 on my private pilot exam. He took it. He, like, grimaced at me, took it, went to the chief pilot's office, and he said, look, Maddie's satisfied with mediocrity.
Oh, wow.
Ouch.
I went and cried. I was like, I'll retake it. And he's just like, no, just do better on your next one. I was like, okay.
So confession time. I'm not very good academically speaking when it comes to tests. I will be the first one to tell you that obviously you want to score as well as you possibly can. It's not the make all break all. I can say that as somebody who's gotten 70s on knowledge exams.
So I was going to say, it sounds like somebody's gotten 70s on knowledge tests.
Yes. I think I barely squeaked by on my commercial. if I'm being completely honest. Yeah. When we're talking about knowledge tests, we're talking about theory, especially if you don't have, because obviously when you go through your knowledge test, you're going through your, everything is theory until you actually put it into practice, right? So in theory, you know how to do the performance charts. In theory, you know what kind of airspace goes from the surface to, you know, pick your altitude, 700 feet, 1200 feet, whatever the requirements are. You kind of have that basic understanding, but it's all theory until you actually put it into practice, until you actually start flying through that airspace, try to start performing those performance charts and actually seeing how close they actually get to the actual aircraft performance. So for me, theory is hard. Flying the airplane is significantly easier.
Yeah.
I don't know if
I have a nuts on that. Yeah, but it totally makes sense. I had a girl who just moved in down the hall for this semester. She transferred from another local school to Mankato, and I had met her and I was like, oh, what are you studying? And she's like, oh, you know, I'm undecided, but you know, I might do aviation. And of course I'm like jumping on her like, oh my gosh, yes, I can tell you everything. I'll show you what to do, where to go, blah, blah, blah. And ever since then, I've totally, you know, she's not doing the actual flight lab. She's not actually flying. She's just in the ground school. And I just keep telling her, I'm like, just go on a Discovery flight. Like, just go. Like, it's way different being up there than it is learning the curriculum. Like, yeah, you might learn about airspace and, you know, all the parts of the plane and the engine and, you know, any other things. But being up in the plane is a lot different than, you know, learning about it on the ground. And it's a lot different than, like, doing it in a simulator, too.
So hopefully with a little bit of help from us, Elle might have a chance of getting into that RV in the future after all. So, Kevin, hope you're listening. Not just for the RV, but because of the tremendous amount of respect that Elle has for you and your part in her journey into aviation. So that's going to do it for this special episode of the Flying Midwest Podcast. Hope you've enjoyed some of the extra content that hit our cutting room floor. We thought it'd be a nice idea to bring some of that back for you to enjoy those things that just couldn't fit into a regular episode. So before we go, as always, if you have any comments or ideas for future shows, you can reach out to us on any of our social media platforms, or you can email us at flyingmidwestpodcast@gmail.com. Also, don't forget to like, subscribe, or leave us some reviews on any of the platforms that you get your podcast from. That helps us grow our audience and share our content with others like you. So, for Maddie, Trevor, and I, until next time, see ya!
Celestia 536, contact Minneapolis Center 132.35 today.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Flying Midwest Podcast. Until next time, podcast service terminated, Squawk VFR, frequency change approved. Good day.
It's time for the bloopers.
Not the pilot of the aircraft, but they're doing a lot of duties to assist. Did you laugh because I said duties?
You're such a professional podcast.
A bill is working its way through the Kansas legislature.
Legislature?
That's Miracle-Gro. I don't know why I have a lisp today. Gosh, it's bad. All right. I didn't do like any talking today.
Did you drink it all?
That's probably why.
I have had
not even a half of a margarita.
You polished off the neck and shoulders. That's enough to get somebody a little
I couldn't speak when we started, and I hadn't started drinking it. So I couldn't say 8,000.
And you still can.
Okay, wait, I'm actually going to try to do a segue here. All right.
Okay.
Okay, I had something, and then I don't know where I stopped.
Was it a margarita?
No. Oh my gosh, I literally don't care about this at all, but I have to talk about it.
All right, we're going to take that out and use that in the doors too. I literally don't care about this at all, but I have to talk about it. Get the plane in the area and you fly around. Who cares about taking off or landing? That stuff's not important.
It's superb. At least they warned you beforehand instead of being like, ha-ha.
And they said, don't hold it in because it will hurt.
Ooh, yeah, I can imagine.
Bubble gum.
Ladies and gentlemen, our show has devolved into fart jokes.
I don't really want to be here, but I can't afford to not be here.